Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
If you enjoy listening to Chorology, then I need your help. Here's why. I create Chorology by myself on a shoestring budget, recording and editing every episode in my tiny closet. How's that for irony? That's where you come in. Will you help keep Chorology on the air by supporting it financially? By tipping as little as $1 a month, you can help me improve and keep making Chorology every week. All you have to do is jump over to MatthiasRoberts.com/support to make a pledge and listen away. Hey, friends. This is Matthias Roberts, and you're listening to Chorology, a podcast on belief in being. This is episode 62.
My ability to see love in places I never was able to sense or receive before is just exploded, and I'm so grateful for that.
Alison Stoner is an accomplished actress, dancer, and recording artist who is known for her performances in blockbuster movie franchises Step Up, Cheaper by the Dozen, her voiceover work in TV shows like Phineas and Ferb, dancing in music videos for Missy Elliott and Eminem, and then most recently, her new music. Earlier this year, Alison came out publicly via her single When It's Right and an essay in Teen Vogue, sharing her journey of falling in love with a woman for the first time. She gets into this a little bit more in this episode. Currently, Alison's hard at work on new music. She's set to release a new single in January 2019, and she also remains active in the voiceover world and can be heard on the Amazon Prime series Pete the Cat, Disney's Milo Murphy's Law, and she'll reprise her role in Phineas and Ferb in January 2019. I met Alison several weeks ago at a wedding. Actually, it was Tori and Alex's wedding, if you remember from season one. They got married a few weeks ago. Congratulations, Tori and Alex. And Alison and I got into an incredible conversation around faith and sexuality there. And I asked her if she would want to continue that conversation here on Chorology so you all can listen in. And here we are. I have no announcements this week, so let's just go ahead and dive in. Alison, hi, welcome.
Hello.
I'm so excited to have you on Chorology today. Thank you.
Thank you.
So to start, the question that I ask everyone, how do you identify? And then how would you say that your faith has helped form that identity?
Oh, the hot seat.
Yeah.
Today, I feel honest in identifying as a white cisgender woman. I don't feel comfortable labeling my sexual orientation or even my faith at the moment, not because I'm afraid of the words themselves or being stereotyped, but because there's a certain magic happening in letting the sediment keep swirling in the water versus like forcing it to settle and land somewhere. And I'm being so transformed because of mystery that I want to stay here for now. I seem to be able to love better and wider and deeper from here for now.
I love that. That like the that idea of mystery, because I think I feel like you're kind of highlighting this. Anytime we use labels, there's a certain certainty that's established that can then make things hard. That mystery then somewhat disappears in a way.
Yeah, and I would say words ultimately are merely symbols anyway. You know, they have the meaning we give them. I can say, this is a poor example, but I can say, I hate you, but infuse true love and affection. And if you didn't understand English, you'd feel the intention more than the definition of hate. So we have to recognize the silliness and frivolousness of words when we're trying to describe an incredible universe. You know, in my opinion, people and within the church, my experience, we get hung up on words and we develop somewhat of a this or that, where do you stand on this topic, yes or no checklist approach to know like who's in and out of the faith. And I mean, I'll go off on a quick tangent. We forget that there have been hundreds of translations and iterations of the Bible, and we're not necessarily even practicing the same thing they were back in the day anyway. So, you know, yes, we've got to respect that mystery is wonderful and beautiful and transformative.
I mean, my mind is going to like, I mean, you mentioned the Bible, but like that idea of like the divine God is mystery. And I think I always think about that, like if we believe this idea that humanity is created in the image of the divine, whatever that means, I feel like we have to acknowledge that there is going to be mystery present everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't have the capacity or space for all people, all perspectives, all educational views, then are you really able to see the divinity in every material thing, every material being? And that's something I noticed just over the last several years. My ability to see love in places I never was able to sense or receive before is just exploded. And I'm so grateful for that. It's really untethered a lot of, I guess, fear of otherness, fear of, I don't know, anyone who's on the outside. I mean, what is the outside anyway? I'm sorry, you're going to get to a point where like, oh, we're explaining everything away. Suddenly there's nothing left. And I'll be like, yes, emptiness, we've arrived.
Yeah.
You know, but like the soul soothing emptiness.
Mm-hmm. It's real though.
Yeah, right? But you don't hear that in church settings. I mean, no. Contemplation and mysticism is like, you know, paganism is like abhorred, and these deplorable, you know, people who talk about an embodied faith, and God forbid we're connected to our physical earth suit while we're here. Like, come on. Anyways.
I mean, yeah. Like, I'm like over here being like, uh-huh.
But I have to remember, you know, I'm nervous about speaking so candidly right now because, like I was telling you, it's been a long time since I've had a public conversation about faith and spiritual formation. And, you know, the mainstream culture tends to feel like the big kid with the power. And I currently feel smaller because, you know, my faith historically fell within very safe parameters. And now just by sheer authenticity, I'm probably offending or scaring people, or I'm on the fringes and I'll lose people's trust. But we have to talk about these things. And again, I'm just grateful that you create that space.
I'm curious because you're talking about this kind of historical faith that you have held. Mm-hmm. And now kind of where you're at. And I would imagine, and you have spoken about this, like it has been a journey arriving to where you are now. Yeah. And will continue to be a journey. But right. I'd love to kind of hear about some of that process of where you've been.
Oof. Okay. I would love to, I've never actually teased this out, so you're in for a ride. I would love to first point out that I recognize I carry patterns from my past family dynamics and, you know, things outside of the faith, so to speak, outside of the church, into my relationship with God, right? So if I'm a perfectionist, then I become a Christian perfectionist. And if I had a difficult relationship with my father, then it was harder for me to call God dad, but easier for me to call God God for a while, you know, until God became the father I thought I was missing and blah, 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 blah. So there's all of those layers. Then, of course, there are the layers in hindsight I'm beginning to recognize, like my own geography. I was going to a very radical, evangelical, non-denominational church, and, you know, things like don't ever get horizontal with the person because you'll get pregnant and die, and like never wear clothes that show anything below the neck. You know, so really conservative, even though they would tell you that they were provocative, you know, and progressive, whatever that means. And so over time, I'll also say it got tethered in with my entertainment background. There was almost a showmanship and a performance that I think many Christians can relate to, but being in the public eye, I couldn't truly be vulnerable with things I, you know, was wrestling with. I had to kind of become almost the public figure and face for young Christians. I was asked to speak at congregations before I was even spiritually mature, just because I was a child star in Hollywood. And I have these very interesting experiences of recognizing how the Christian culture is actually really reflective of like consumerism and capitalism and commercialism, individualism, all of these ideologies and concepts and constructs that I now have words for, thankfully. But in the moment, felt like I'm simply using my platform for Christ, and I'm called to do this, that, and the other. And anytime I fail, it's because Satan has a target on my back. And, you know, there's that sense of like American exceptionalism as well embedded in there. So I've been a lot of places, but I will say it was mostly and consistently black and white, very linear. And I took a lot of pride in that. I had a huge ego boost every time I could quote more scriptures, you know, than the person next to me, but do it in a way that was supposed to sound encouraging, inspirational. And as time went on, you know, the real like impetus for change was me being attracted to a woman. I mean, talk about startling and like completely conflicting with my theology and, you know, community's teachings. And that was the beginning of deconstructing and examining all the filters and just how all those pieces got there. And, you know, I felt like I was able to be mentored by some really wonderful people, and still am, and constantly finding new teachers. Of course, you can learn from everyone. And yeah, now it's sort of like I'm examining the mosaic that was me, that is me, letting go of some pieces, keeping some, transforming others. And I don't know if I'm ever going to totally rebuild as much as just continue to examine and know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You talk about in the piece that you wrote, your kind of big quote unquote coming out piece that you published last March, about like this experience of kind of breaking down in your bed, crying and saying something like, God, like if I'm evil, then I accept this. And then you talk about this moment of thinking like that would plunge you into despair, but experiencing deep love instead.
Yeah. I've never really talked about this openly, so thanks for the opportunity. You know, recently I was at a screening for a movie called Boy Erased, which talks about conversion therapy. And I had a moment with a really wonderful woman at the end, and we cried in each other's arms in the bathroom. And I tried to explain this moment to her a little bit, but you can never quite articulate something that's so personal and so vivid, especially years later, you know. But in that moment, I was ready to accept that I was demon-possessed, that I was, if we're talking about like Calvinism and predestination, I was ready to accept that God had already destined me for hell. And that's why I couldn't change this. I was a mess. I was a wreck. And that moment of feeling freedom, it was very still. It wasn't a sensationalized, super emotional moment. It was like a glimpse of clarity and a window that I didn't see in the room before. And it wasn't at all about finding the solution or changing my theology or the this or the that's. It was just simply being held and still and quiet. And I think that's important to recognize, that I spent a lot of time in very loud churches where the louder you pray and the more words you pray and the louder the music, the higher to God you get. And I'm such an introvert to begin with, but also silence and solitude and meditation are so crucial for the spiritual experience. I've always admired monks, and my therapist would use the phrase, "You're a monk without a monastery." And I, in that moment, kind of experienced like the first glimpse of what my future might look like, where my spirituality might be very different from someone else's, but God apparently hadn't given up on me. I had no answers. I was actually totally okay with being like, hey, we're just gonna be enemies, and I can't do anything else. I can't change this. I really tried. That was the beginning of being okay with not knowing. And I guess I've never felt like I understand God, the divine spirit realm, everything more than when I connect with the unknown. I'm rambling. I'm sorry.
No, I'm processing. No, I mean, that honestly, that doesn't feel like rambling to me, because I'm hearing this really beautiful experience of getting in touch with, I mean, this is going to sound so woo-woo, but getting in touch with a deeper level of energy and love that is in the world. And I feel like, I mean, you're telling your story, but it makes me think of so many other stories of getting to that point of like, God, like, I don't know what else to do. And if this means we're not in okay terms, then like, so be it, because I know what's in my body. Like, and then realizing on the other side of that, that there is love.
And the word transcendent entered my vocabulary. I finally understood that there is a space that exists beyond the rights and wrongs, and beyond, sorry, I live near an airport.
That's fine. You can hear the plane.
Really trying to drive home a point here. But there is a transcendent place. And as you ascend, you stop picking on people and on yourself, and you start just living and being able to coexist, which I know is a very scary word for many Christians, but I simply mean peaceably recognizing, if you prefer to say Jesus, then say Jesus in everyone and everything, in every place you meet, and working together toward wholeness versus destruction. You know, in some groups, the word sin has far less to do with behavior as much as like, are you just forgetting your divine nature? Are you experiencing the shadow side because you just forgot that the light is right around the corner, and it is in you at all times? And naturally, when you come from that place of love and understanding, a different behavior, a different lifestyle forms. You know? I'm like so nervous to listen back to this interview. What? I don't want to lead people to the quote unquote wrong place, a harmful place. And if you're untying deep-seated beliefs for someone right now, it puts them in a vulnerable place. And I always want to make sure they have the support to navigate the nuances and their own suspicions and doubts and reconcile them. And, you know, with your therapy background, with my background as being in therapy for so many years, we have to help each other return to a place of resilience. So we're not entering manic states or depressive states and just feeling like so overwhelmed by all of this. And I wish that kind of nurturing and support was offered in the church, but I don't always find, I guess, that level of emotional intelligence, mental health education. I would love to see a little bit more of that if we're putting that out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think goes to a good next question is like, so if you weren't able to find support in the church, which is an incredibly common story, like that's my story.
Yeah. It's so sad.
Right. Like what were the support structures that you did find?
Oh, all of them in the beginning were so gay.
I love it. Yes.
So my first girlfriend, all of her friends, some of them were Christian and identified as gay or within the queer community. But for the most part, there was still a separation there. However, their ability to just like welcome me with open arms, without, for the record, for those who are listening, thinking like they were trying to lure me in and convert me, that's really not the case. They were just there to listen. In fact, I look back now and wonder if my words were harmful and hurtful to them. And also to my girlfriend at the time. You know, I was so concerned with trying to do the safe, acceptable thing. I'm not sure I ever tried to make a safe place for my girlfriend and for the queer community. And for that, I take responsibility. I have compassion for the many factors that led there. And I, you know, try to carry forward with all the lessons. But, you know, then I encountered authors like Richard Rohr, and mystics, Celtic Christianity, even church history, The Dark Night of the Soul, different pieces of text, literature, poetry that Thomas Merton, for example, New Seeds of Contemplation, he wasn't afraid to use poetic language that might not like be the standard format for describing the Christian experience. And I needed that. I just needed a larger vocabulary. And I found that through people who were willing to wrestle with mystery and for people who didn't feel like they had to protect their own reputation with which in my experience, oftentimes were people who, weren't super hardcore affiliated with an institution.
You just mentioned, this wondering of whether you had maybe when you were first taking these steps, I'm wondering if you maybe hurt people in the queer community. Oh. That made me think of, like, I have those stories of things that I said as I was just beginning to step out of like, I will never be a person who thinks that homosexuality is okay. Like, and I said that to gay people as a means of self-protection, but it was a reflection of where I was at. And I'm curious, like, as you've stepped along, you mentioned compassion. How do you find the compassion for that Allison?
Oof. Many tears. To be honest, I cry way more now, way more often, and way more, ugly in a wonderful way. And it happens almost every day because I finally have breathing room to let things surface and be reflective. And, you know, we're all so busy with our schedules. So healing is a process that takes time. It's very subjective, right? but having compassion for my younger self is hard. Most evidently when I think about my, my first girlfriend and how much harm and destruction resulted from that relationship. And of course, out of respect for her until, you know, she gives me full permission to share. I'm not sure it's totally necessary, but there were just so many struggles because of my faith. And that's okay. But man, to think that I've contributed to someone else's scars is heartbreaking. And I just hope that I'm continually more sensitive and I walk in a real humility where I'm able to be corrected and held accountable moment to moment. You know, this reminds me also, and it's adjacent, and I know you'll understand. I was once speaking to a congregation of people of color as a really young baby Christian. And why? I was so out of touch with their day-to-day experience, with my privilege. You know, I'm still learning. And sure, anyone can be used at any given time, and we don't have to limit ourselves with labels, but we can do better. We can be more aware, more involved in reality and the multidimensionality of reality for all of the people around us, and way more mature about supporting people in the mess, including ourselves as we're repairing. And I look back and I'm like, why was I in a place of, why was I teaching about things that I needed to learn, you know? So it's hard. I don't have perfect compassion, but I will say as that increases, so does my compassion for everyone else. And that makes it so worth it, right? You're like, you can't always find a reason to heal your own wounds because you're being a little self-deprecating or whatever the issue is. You're melancholic and you just like it sometimes.
Yeah.
Self-indulgent, whatever. then remembering that, like, the degree that I love myself is the degree that I can love others is like, all right, let's do this. Like, let's dive in.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was literally just talking to a group about this just like two nights ago about that sense of we really cannot love others, right, unless we love ourselves, which, right, sounds, I mean, to my young Christian ears.
Oh, yeah. Horrible. Narcissistic. Why isn't Christ your identity?
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Because I think we're taught, we're enculturated into at least the theological system that I was brought into, mm-hmm, was this sense of the quote unquote hate what is evil, and mm-hmm, we were the evil ones. And,
oh yes.
And then love can't flow out of that in my mind now. Like there's a disparity there.
Yeah. And I find it so interesting that, you know, Christians, of course, I cannot use generalizations. Some Christians, there's this notion that we're, you know, awful sinners, and to live as Christ and anything else is like not, you can't claim that you're good. You can't claim that you're perfect or whatever. And there's a lot to discuss there. I'm not sure I'm the one or it's the time to try and do that. But then yes, going into recognizing that some Christians don't understand their, the mental frameworks in which they process their faith and experience and navigate everything relates a lot to like modernism and the Enlightenment and shifting eras where logic and rationale and empirical data became dominant, and like trusting the body and intuitive intelligence and alternative medicine became unreliable. And then, as you've mentioned in other episodes, they don't always see that, you know, for example, a white American evangelical Christian might not know the parasitic relationship between Christianity and white supremacy. Or like, how often do you hear pastors willing to use less rehearsed terms to describe LGBTQIA plus youth issues and like the suicide rates? Like, will they talk about that in the congregation? How many sermons have you heard relay Jesus's counterculture radical love to getting involved with policy and advocacy and activism to upend oppressive systems and go focus on the collective liberation of all, and not just spiritually, but legally. Like, you know, a part of me is just like, wake up. You're supporting people if you've never left the comfort of the home. Like, or if you can't recognize love within yourself, like, can you notice how that has played out in your life? And might there be another way of seeing it, whether you choose to ascribe to it or not? And when I think about prayer and how my prayers used to be so full of requests and, like, you know, what is your will and blah, 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 blah. And that's wonderful. Fine. Everyone has their own prayer style. But, like, also pray with your hands and feet. And to be inclusive, if you're differently abled, pray with the actions you are uniquely equipped for. Like, don't just keep chatting. Like, one, listen, and also two, act. And I haven't seen a ton of that in my particular faith groups. But to me, it's like so reflective of God's nature, or, you know, just the shared cosmic universal nature of everyone who is here with us, if you don't, ascribe to Christianity.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, you'd mentioned kind of the Enlightenment and modernism and this movement away from our bodies. And then talking about letting our faith practice move us in ways that are physical, that involve bodies. That makes me think.
Oh, no.
And I mean, that makes me think, like, you're a dancer. You move for a living. Mm. And I'd be so curious about whether you feel a connection there in your spirituality and in creativity and movement and embodiment.
I do now, but I did not. I felt imprisoned by it and betrayed by it mostly, because wanting to represent, you know, a hard-headed linear version of faith in entertainment industry where you have to tell stories about people going through everything, you feel very limited. But again, also that strange ego boost of like, but I'm going to stand in integrity and only talk about things in one way until people understand and fall in line. And then with dance, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. You know, I was very prudish anyway for many reasons, and my faith kind of contributed to that. I didn't date until after I was 18. I was in certain, like, dance classes that were provocative, and all I could hear were, like, scriptures, and, like, I wasn't able to explore anything because there was just no freedom. And I didn't want to get it wrong. I just wanted to be the perfect Christian for God, you know? And I look back and I'm like, oh no, like, where did we get off the path? Like, the body, oh, is full of intelligence and guidance and wisdom. And wow, it's your gift. It's your, like, it's giving you clues all day long as to what feels right and doesn't feel right, safe, not safe. Your gut is holy. Like, using the word gut as a Christian to me 5 years ago would have been like, ooh, can you at least say the Spirit? You know, can you at least say the Holy Spirit? And now I'm just so, so grateful for my skin, for my body. And I have to remain grounded in it. That's sort of, I feel, the way I'm able to encounter the divine all day long, as opposed to having to retreat to a prayer room and pray for an hour to get back in contact. You know, my cells are a reflection of the divine. I everything is spiritual. I remember going to, I believe it was a Rob Bell.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. A Rob Bell conference. And for the record, I had only ever listened to interviews of him years prior, during which I, like, scolded teachings. And finally, when I was able to hear him firsthand relay the full story, I went, oh. And of course, I was there standing next to my girlfriend at the time. And even she, who didn't come from the church, we were like, okay, this is sort of a happy middle ground for now while we're figuring out what this is. We don't have to agree with everything. We don't have to disagree with everything. But he connected a lot of dots for me, and he brought the body into the equation, and he brought science into the equation. And I was like, oh, wow, this doesn't sound like some kind of like whitewashed, evangelical washed version of science and body where you still like are scared to really talk about how things feel in your body. It was a real rooted display. So again, I am just rambling today.
I love it because again, and I know I just said this, but to me, it doesn't feel like rambling. Like I feel like all of these things are so deeply connected. In the way
everything is connected.
Everything is spiritual.
Everything is spiritual. Even if you don't use the word spiritual, I invite everyone who's listening who might have come from my audience and is not Christian or whatever you feel about things. Like if the word spiritual is uncomfortable, I am so okay with recognizing like that there are literal frequencies and energies that you can measure scientifically. And that's okay. Like that's more than okay. That is real. It's true. So I just want to be as inclusive as possible. And thankfully I'm no longer intimidated by like, getting the words right and wrong.
Yeah.
That's been super freeing. Although I know it scares a lot of people in faith groups.
Yeah, because I mean, we're taught that we have to use a certain language, and then if we don't use the right language, then you were talking about that kind of like in and out earlier, and it's a marker of who's out. And I'm really grateful that you are broadening this out, because whether or not we use the same language for energy, for spirituality, for whatever we're talking about, there's common experience. And that's really important to acknowledge.
And who am I to invalidate someone else's felt experience? You know what I mean? Ooh, I was when I spend time traveling and I encounter Christians, non-Christians, all humans everywhere, and they use different language. I couldn't imagine taking their stories away from them and denying them because they didn't use my English Western, you know, language. Oh, and I just wish, I guess, more people could see the beauty and diversity and how we can be united in that. And there's richness in it as opposed to like that us versus them spiel.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Should we come back up to the surface and talk about what your favorite movie is? Or I feel like we've been diving into the trenches.
Yeah. Sure, why not? Let's bring it back up. And what is your favorite movie?
Fun fact, I don't watch films.
Really?
I watch documentaries, but
I don't listen to podcasts, so here we are.
That's so funny.
So I guess this is a question that I'm realizing I've started asking a lot of people at the end of an episode, but like for people who are listening to this podcast, who are in places that you have been before of that fear or that like everything that you've kind of described this episode of what life was like in the midst of this is strong language, but in my mind, a more oppressive religious structure. For people who are just beginning to realize that there might be something different about them, or that their faith identity isn't quite doing it anymore, and the terror that comes with that, what would you say to those people?
I always lead with curiosity, and not just because being curious is like affiliated with queer culture. But having a posture of curiosity allows room, and doesn't jump to conclusions, and it doesn't lead with judgment. There's a compassion there. You're just asking questions. And you know, I had to learn how to be an ally to myself. But if you can appreciate that opportunity, learn how to love yourself in this process and check in. And if you feel like you can't talk to anyone yet, of course, there are so many podcasts and books and things that you can look up, and I encourage you to do so. But talk it out, write it out with yourself, and develop that really strong, nurturing relationship there, because it's going to help you be able to communicate with other people eventually, as well as recognize after communicating whether their response is bringing harm to you, or if it's a safe place to continue exploring. And just know, I mean, you're so okay. You really are. And there's nothing wrong with you. And man, I wish I understood that a lot sooner. And if I can try and bring a little bit of lightheartedness to it, the more you get to know yourself, the less surprised you're going to be about anything else. And it really is freeing, because you're slowly escaping this like jail cell. And you know, I do things sometimes now, instead of being like, oh wow, that was awful, or ooh, what a mistake. I'm like, oh, I remember the last time this happened because I spent time getting to know myself, and I can observe how if I'm not mindful, this will become a pattern, or it already is, and I'm ready to kind of break free from it. So it just enjoy this invitation into intimacy with self, with God, or whatever you consider a higher source, or if no higher source, that's also okay. Just be okay with where you are in the process. You do not have to arrive somewhere right now. And, you know, as I said in the beginning, like the mystery is the destination in many ways. There is just so much awesomeness to mystery. And if you learn how to encounter mystery, there's going to be some kind of like special perspective that you're able to have in situations where other people might be bound to more linear constructs. And it might even help you become the bridge in the future to, you know, polarized groups. So yeah, just, you know, listen to me or not. You can just throw everything I said away too. That's fine. But know that I support you, and I'm here for you. I'm thinking of you.
I love it. Thank you, Allison, so much for joining me.
Thank you for letting me speak. Oh my God.
This has been a blast.
I'm so nervous. Truly, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for everything you're doing. This podcast is so crucial.
Thank you. Allison is on Instagram and Twitter at Allison Stoner. She's also on YouTube, The Real Allison Stoner. You can spend lots of time checking out her new music and her music videos over there on her YouTube channel. I did that instead of editing this episode, and it was a lot of fun. Queerology is on Twitter and Instagram at QueerologyPod, or you can tweet me directly at Matthias Roberts. Queerology is supported by its listeners. To help keep spreading a message of love and belonging, pledge $1 a month or more over at MatthiasRoberts.com/support. A really easy way to help support Queerology is by leaving a rating and a review. Do that right in your podcast app, or head over to MatthiasRoberts.com/review, and it'll take you right there. As always, I'd love to hear from you. If you have ideas of what you want to hear on the podcast, or just want to say hi, reach out. I'll get back to you. And until next week, y'all, bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.